Midweek Style, Wednesday, the 19th of April, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We featured Connecticut Catholic Conference Executive Director Chris Healy on the status of the latest aid in dying bill at the Capitol. Hearst Connecticut Media columnist Dan Haar gave us his thoughts on the state's political scene and the budget talks. And I also had a few thoughts on the continuing geriatric dysfunction in the U.S. Congress. Joining us right now, so with us a couple of weeks ago, Christopher Healy, the executive director of the Connecticut Catholic Conference. Chris, good afternoon, sir, and how are you today?
Great, Paul. Thanks again for letting me join you.
Thanks. What is the update now, Chris, as to the status of this bill in Hartford today vis-a-vis the Judiciary Committee? What do you have for us?
Well, about a half an hour ago, the co-chair of the committee, Senator Gary Winfield, announced that there would not be enough votes to pass assisted suicide out of the Judiciary Committee back to the state Senate for action. Obviously, the Catholic Conference, along with other people in this coalition against this kind of policy, are overjoyed, and we're thankful to God for this day. And we're also thankful to people in the committee that were open to our arguments that life is precious at every stage and that we need to work to preserve this life we have here in this world. And that we have to work on areas where we can certainly show greater compassion and care for people with serious health and mental health challenges, many of whom have used that or have said that is one of the reasons that they wanted the state to get into the suicide business. So we hope that over the next few months and year that we can talk about improving hospice care through Medicaid programs, through private insurance, increase education, and create more mental health services. Because where we've seen in other states the assisted suicide bill become law, the people that take advantage of it or want to apply for it often cite mental health issues. In other words, a lack of interest in living, and often doesn't have anything to do with pain or healthcare issues, but has to do with loneliness and other mental health challenges. So we think that's where the emphasis should be. We're eager to work with people on it, but for today, at least, we won't have this, what we think is a destructive and a bad signal for our culture that says that, you know, that we help people, you know, take their own life in an often lonely and unforgiving manner.
Chris, I find it interesting because you've been around politics long enough, you've been up there, that this is the kind of a bill. It's rare that it comes along that bills are not strictly party line here in Connecticut, because if this was, this probably would have passed. So I would assume that there are some arguments made by your group and others that may have caused at least enough concern or enough second thoughts on both sides of the aisle. Were you able to gauge that? Did legislators specifically say, hey, Chris, we're a little uncomfortable with this, that, or the other? What did you actually hear?
Well, it's not a partisan issue. Let me say that first. It is a personal issue, and we go at it from different viewpoints. Obviously, from the faith viewpoint, we feel that life is something that we protect at inception all the way to its natural end, and that only God can play God. But we worked with progressives. We worked with hospice volunteers, palliative care volunteers, people from the disabled community, veterans groups, places where suicide is a contagion and suicide lurks very heavily. And, you know, we made many arguments about why we think it's, you know, a poor policy choice, because it sort of gives up on people and it sort of creates a very unwelcoming cold world of transactions. But there are other arguments to be made against this in terms of just its practical application, safeguards, the people involved, the keeping certain family members out of the decision-making process. And there are very many gaps that were never answered. You know, mm-hmm. How would these issues be dealt with as it relates to insurance? And in Canada, where 11,000 Canadians have taken their own lives through the state, the National Health Insurance now offers that as an alternative for people who seek extended care at the end of life or through calamitous healthcare diagnoses where they're given the option of taking their own life or not being covered for care. And that's one of the arguments we made, that that's where we're headed. Because ultimately, when you're looking at who would be most susceptible to these kind of overtures, they would be people near the end of life, elderly, or people that are chronically ill. And the ability for abuse to happen, we think, is quite evident. And that was another argument we made. But it was not a partisan argument, and it's not a partisan issue. It's a life issue. And, thankfully, enough people in Capitol were able to listen to these disparate voices we have in this coalition, of which the Catholic Conference is just one of many. Obviously, we're very, happy about the outcome here, but we also realize this issue will come back. It's been up here now for, I think, 13 years in a row. As you know, certain issues just never seem to end, and that's fine. We understand that, but we are going to continue to make the arguments that we can do better as a society to help people that may be facing these kind of dilemmas at the end of life without resorting to something cruel and as impersonal as suicide.
You know, Chris, finally, I did take some calls earlier in the show when I did update the audience on what you had told me before you came on. And I did have a couple of people who were, frankly, Chris, angry at that and saying, you know, who are we as a society to stand in the way of someone who has no chance, who has this right in probably about a dozen other states and the nation's capital? How would you answer those folks?
Well, I respect what people have to say on these issues, and I understand where a lot of the fear, and a lot of this is all based on fear, fear of the unknown, fear of the future. Our argument is every day is precious and should be enjoyed to that, and every person is precious, and their lives are important, and we should be working on ways to make people comfortable and healthy and happy in their lives. And when they face these challenges, we have argued there are other alternatives to this and that people should consider that. This is all part of what a republic, a democratic society is about. You argue your points and in front of the people you elect to serve you, and you take votes and you implement policies or change it or repeal it. And that's what we've been doing up here for the better part of 14 years. But I think the common ground, Paul, the common ground is how do we create a system, a healthcare system that does take care of people through the end, compassionately and effectively? How do we provide mental health services to people who do feel lonely and desperate and at the end of life as well, who often turn to this? You know, and how do we create a culture of life where, we are thankful every day that we are here in this world doing the best we can, and we're hopeful. We're not looking down the barrel of darkness, and I think that's the difference here. But I certainly respect, and we always respect the people that disagree with us up here, but that's the beauty of our system. At least it allows us both to have those arguments as best we can and see where the outcome eventually leads us.
All right, Chris Healy. Chris, Executive Director of the Connecticut Catholic Conference. We thank you, Chris. Take care, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Chris Healy there. All right, agree, disagree, whatever, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Interesting that Chris noted, and I noted this before, that whenever a committee doesn't vote on something, in Connecticut, understand something, the committees are all controlled by Democrats. And usually a lot of stuff with public safety and spending and whatever, those are partisan votes. Happens in Congress, too. I mean, when the Republicans control the committees, it's a Republican majority vote. When the Democrats control the committees, it's a Democrat majority vote. So understand here, as Chris said and I mentioned before, it probably means when there was not enough support, when Gary Winfield, who chairs the Judiciary Committee, he's a very powerful Democrat in Hartford. Many would say, next to the governor, Gary Winfield might be the second most powerful Democrat in the state. When he says he's not bringing it to a vote, that means members of his own party have misgivings on this as well. Check in now with Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar for his thoughts as to what is going on across the state. And Dan, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, good. Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock and the 10 a.m. meeting of the legislature's finance committee has not been called into order yet.
Not yet.
It was called into order for them to discuss the tax breaks, and it was immediately called into a, you know, closed-door meetings. So they've had 3 months to do closed-door meetings, and on the day that they were set to vote on the plan, they call a closed-door meeting, and it is, what is 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.? Is that 7 hours?
I think, sir, 7 hours, Dan. Yes, yes.
However, the good news is that thanks to their staff, their diligent staff, friends of ours, we actually do have the proposed draft documents, which may or may not change and be changing as we speak as they go into session. And what the main thing that you and your listeners and I and my readers need to know, drum roll, please. Are you ready for this?
All right.
Okay. The governor's much touted proposed tax cut for people paying 5% on their state income tax was to go from 5 to 4.5%. The draft from the legislature is saying, let's make that only a 4.75%. That's, let's make that half percent cut into a quarter percent cut, right? To which I have strong comments, some of which can, some which cannot be said on family radio.
Okay.
and then the earned income tax credit, which is the tax credit, it's called a tax credit, but it's basically a check to low-income workers. You must be working. And generally, the more you work, the more you get. And then you go up and you lose more as you work more. But it's a curve. Is increasing more than the governor wanted to increase it. The governor wanted to take it from 30% of the federal earned income tax credit. Because remember, the earned income tax credit, the tax credit for the working poor, is mainly a federal program.
Yeah.
States piggyback on that and add their own amounts. And Connecticut is one of the more generous states at 30%. Okay. And now they want to take it to 40% to really reward working poor, you know, people working. And the legislature wants to make that 45. So that's an additional $20 million to the working poor, you know, people making $20,000, $30,000 a year. And that's the other big change. Another big change is they're going to once again continue for another 3 years the corporate earnings tax surcharge. The surcharge was tacked on temporarily something like 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And every 2 years, the legislature says, no, we're not going to retire the surcharge. It's a 10% surcharge. So that continues under this version of the budget. But the good news for business is all kinds of credits get enlarged.
Okay. All right.
So that's so now what I'm doing is I'm giving you news in a time warp, which is the news hasn't happened yet. I'm actually watching a picture of the blank, empty committee room. So these documents haven't been released yet, but this is what they're working on.
So, Dan Hart, give me your broad look at this. You gave me the details here, but from a political point of view, is this a thing where the governor went in and said, okay, I gave these numbers, but they're probably going to come back with this? Or is it a little of that plus, okay, the governor flexing his muscle and the legislature saying, hey, Ned, a lot of us have been here longer than you have. This is how things work. What's your kind of in total look at this, at least as it stands now?
These differences are not big. Remember, it's a $50 billion two-year budget.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature increased spending over and above Lamont's $50 billion total by $400 million. Now, $400 million is a lot of money to you and me, but it's you know, a 1%, basically.
It's
not quite a 1% increase in spending. Okay, so that's on the spending side. They increased the governor's proposal. That's not an unusual back and forth. This happens. We've seen much bigger differences, especially when there's a Republican governor and a Democratic legislature.
Mm-hmm.
On the taxing side, again, these aren't big differences. Everybody agrees there should be broad-based tax cuts. However, to me, and my point and my takeaway here is, if you're going to give me a tax cut, give me a tax cut. Don't give me a quarter point tax cut. right? A quarter point tax cut is basically $100.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I like $100 as much as
I take it right now, Dan. You want to give me $100? Where do we meet? Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I think I spent it last night in a restaurant.
Oh,
that's
boy.
Where yours is. That's I'm not giving you yours because I spent it. In any case, it's an insult to me. It's a waste of time. Like, why are we going to the charade of saying we're giving a tax cut when the tax cut for a family making $80,000 a year is $100 or less?
Yeah.
Give me a tax cut. If you want to talk about that, make it a couple, $200, $300, $400. Or go away.
Sure,
give
because
it,
because
you,
you know
want.
With that level of money, Dan, I've argued that on the show. You're right. I've argued your exact point. You know, $300-$400, that could be a new washer, a new dryer, conceivably. It could be maybe a nice 1 or 2 day little outing somewhere. That's real money. But let me ask you this: as you eyeball this, and Dan Haar breaking a little news here on Connecticut Today, looking at some of the budgetary documents that he's gotten, Dan, is there a drinking game involved with the word guardrails? Are guardrails mentioned numerous times in this or not?
Guardrails are mentioned, and in fact, our friend Keith Sanoff of the CT Mirror just posted a story in which he divines a statement. The two Democratic leaders, Marty Looney from New Haven and Matt Ritter from Hartford, the top leaders, the Speaker and the Senate President pro tem, issued a statement today saying that it's nice that the committee has done its work. Now we're talking about the spending side.
Yeah.
Right? We've been talking about the taxing side. We're moving over to the spending side. And on the spending side, which was released yesterday, they issued a statement saying we need to do more for human services. We need to do more for this. We need to do more for that. And so what Keith is divining from that, probably based on people he's talking with, is what they're really saying is we're going to find some tricks to get around the guardrails, to get around, right? So the quote that they put out was, as we move forward, and this came to all of us, not just Keith, this was put out today. As we move forward, we will be looking at finding ways to bolster funding in a number of critical areas, including nonprofits, public schools, higher education, healthcare and childcare workers, paraprofessionals, and group homes. Those are the groups that most got shortchanged in the budget, both from Lamont and from the Appropriations Committee yesterday. They're essentially large numbers of people, thousands, tens of thousands of people, who do social service work that is state work, but they're not state employees. They're doing it under contract.
Mm-hmm.
They have traditionally been underpaid, and they have traditionally come and said, we need, in this year, the number was $500 million or $480 million. They got 20 out of that, 20
wow.
million, not enough, right? And that doesn't even include the home care workers who are under a separate category because they're independent. But in any case, be all that as it may, it is possible to divine that statement to mean that what they really are saying is, forget the guardrails. We're going to get around those guardrails. And there are, as you obviously know, there are ways to get around the guardrails. You know, we won't talk about those in this show because they'll put people to sleep. Suffice to say that there are tricks out there to get around the guardrails.
You're saying, Dan, that's going to make people's eyes glaze over? Is that the classic glazing over?
Yes. No, I think the important question that we can focus on is will the legislature stick to the spirit of these austerity, you know, these measures, not austerity, these measures that are designed to keep spending under control, or will they go to the letter of the law and say, well, you know, if you divert $200 million out of that program and you put just in broad outline, I can give you the two basic ways of getting around the budget.
Sure, sure.
Cap, right? One is that the money never goes into the general fund to begin with, right? So that's just a diversion,
mm-hmm.
right? You get like an airplane landing at Tweed Airport and diverting to Delaware, right?
Yeah.
It just never lands. So that's one way. And those, you take tax money and you say, we're going to put it in this bucket over here.
Got it.
And therefore, another way is to take the surplus and apply the surplus this year to spending on programs next year.
Yeah.
Right? And that is a very dangerous thing to do because it spends one-time money on recurring expenses. And that's what people want to do because, you know, because that's what scorpions do.
So, interesting stuff. Dan Haar, thank you. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist who's given us a little breaking news here as to what we'll be reading in the next couple of days regarding the ongoing budget cha-cha up at the state capitol. Dan, take care. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next week.
Great to be here.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. Dan Haar, check out his stuff, Hearst Connecticut Media and all that. Have you been following what's going on in Washington with Dianne Feinstein? Now, again, a lot of people agree with me on this. A lot of people don't agree with me on this. People say you're just being an ageist jerk. I don't think so. Dianne Feinstein's 89 years old. Now, and that means somebody voted for her again when she was 84. Now, why anybody would vote for a member of Congress at 84 is now it's beyond me. I'm not trying to be ageist here, but what I don't want to hear, please don't hit me back with the argument, well, you know, maybe they're still sharp. She ain't sharp. There have been numerous articles written that, she's kind of starting to lose it. And again, if you don't believe me, go to Yahoo, go to Google, look it up. You know, one of the members of the most exclusive club on the planet, the U.S. Senate, with 100 very powerful people to determine policy that affects not only the U.S., but tens of millions and hundreds of millions around the world, hasn't been on the job for the past few weeks. Now, she is said to be recovering from shingles. You know, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. I'm not sure. But they were saying heading into this that she was essentially out of it. They were saying that she was essentially out of it. Now, to compound all this, the Senate on a lot of stuff has ground to a halt, mainly on judicial nominees and other things. Remember, there's only a one-vote margin in the Senate. But again, because for some reason we have this affinity for old geriatric legislators, we're in this predicament. And then to compound the problem even further, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, who I still insist, I may be wrong on this, but I still think Gavin Newsom is going to be the Democratic nominee for the White House in 2024. I know President Biden has other ideas. I may be wrong on this. But Gavin Newsom said, hey, if Dianne Feinstein ever steps down, I'm going to, because, you know, a governor gets to name a replacement if a member of the Senate steps down. Well, if Dianne Feinstein ever steps down, I'll make sure I nominate a black woman. I mean, what idiocy. It's got nothing to do with black women. It's got everything to do with saying, well, I'm going to play the race card. And now everybody's in limbo. It's the greatest country in the world. Everybody's in limbo because there's an 89-year-old member of the Senate. 89. 90% of us won't be around when we're 89, yet we're waiting on an 89-year-old member of the Senate. God bless her. She got elected. She was mayor of San Francisco at one time, but now, because she's out with, they say, shingles, and other people are saying she was really out of it, because there's nothing happening in that California seat, nobody wants to do anything. It's sitting there in limbo. This is supposed to be the greatest country in the world with the greatest governing system in the world. And the state of California has right now one member of the U.S. Senate functioning. One! How many million people are in California? 25, 30 million, whatever it is. And they're being represented by one member, one of the U.S. Senate. Because everybody's in limbo because they don't know when she's coming back. She shouldn't even be there. She's 89 years old, going on 90 in the U.S. Senate. Well, you know, my grandmother's 86. Your grandmother's baking cakes and playing bingo.
She's not deciding on policy. So stop, please. I don't want to hear, well, you know, my great aunt, she worked till she was 83. That's great. Your aunt worked at a dentist's office. Your aunt wasn't making policy. And again, Gavin Newsom being the panderer in chief of California, now he's in a bind because if he doesn't represent or replace Dianne Feinstein with, again, a black woman or a woman of color, as he pandered to the voters that said he would, he's going to catch all kind of heck. So he's in the middle of this. So there's gridlock. Is California the biggest state in the country, I think, or is it Texas or Illinois? Population-wise, I'm not sure. I think it's California. So the people of California have one functioning Senate member. And everybody's looking around in D.C. going, what do you think we should do? It is just, and this is all because, I'm sorry, this is because of selfish politicians, and they're on both sides of the aisle. I mean, come on, you think anybody in the modern day, in their mid to upper 70s or 80s in Congress, do you think that they are really ever going to look at things in any sort of a new and or, how should I say this, a new or fresh-looking way? Of course not. Who changes their voting record when they're 75, 80, or 85 years old? It is just, folks, I'm sorry, I had a vent on this today. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I'm sorry. You make your last run for whatever at 70 years old. That's it. 70 years old. That's it. So if you run at 70 and you get elected to the Senate, bye-bye after you're 76. Goodbye. See you later. If you run for president at 70, you get one term. That's it. Sorry. This is just mind-boggling, where every week now, Senator so-and-so, Congressperson so-and-so, they're not in the Senate or Congress this week. Well, why? There's important business. Well, that's because they're looking for the bedpan or something like that. Mind-boggling.